So, my dear, the day you have always dreamed of has arrived. The day you become Bride of Chaotica!
Hello, and welcome to the Brides of Chaotica, a chaotic Star Trek podcast. I'm Taylor, a bona fide Trekkie.
And I'm Elizabeth, and I know that Star Trek teaches us how to be better people.
It totally does. Join us. Oh, I don't know what that clap was. Join us as I show Elizabeth episodes of Star Trek that I love and she has little context for, as I try to slowly indoctrinate her into the world of space court cases, ion storms, and Star Trek being inherently political since day one, even though some people like to ignore that. Elizabeth, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. I've always been under the impression that Star Trek is political inherently.
Yeah, so this episode is being recorded the first week of August, and I think people have been upset that people at the Star Trek convention, like actors and stuff, have been making political commentary on the election and all this stuff. And here's my gripe as an actor with non-actors, is that people assume that just because you're an actor, you aren't allowed to, like, have an opinion all of a sudden, and that you should just stick to acting and stick to the arts and all this stuff. However, art has never not been political, and sure, there's art that's not political. Mm-hmm. However, art has always been a form of political resistance and education and making a point and making a stance, and Star Trek has always been a place of social commentary. And you know what? I support Jerry Ryan talking for 10 minutes about Trump.
Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know specifically what you're referring to, but yeah, I would agree.
Thank you, Jerry Ryan. And like, I think we as actors should make our political stance known.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's something that we shouldn't do.
Well, and it's interesting that, you know, I think you can tell sometimes even by just like the work that actors and artists engage in, like their performances. I feel like if you're paying attention, you can kind of tell where they're coming from and like what they're like, I don't know if I want to say like political leanings, but like what their social opinions are. Like, I feel like that's, I don't feel like it's that big of a shock that people that, you know, act or other artists like have thoughts about politics and society. Yeah. Like it really shouldn't. Yeah.
I think like a lot of people are like, it's a convention. People are like that. However, at conventions, there are Trektivism panels. There are like the political leaning of Star Trek as a franchise has always been wildly clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's always supported infinite diversity in infinite combinations. And yes, that includes people that don't align with the political values of Star Trek. Like, that's fine. Live your life, but don't be upset, in my opinion.
Yeah.
When people voice their opinions, and I will try not to be upset when the opposite is voiced.
I
say that just because,
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like we should all just be in. I'm such an idealist. I'm like, let's just all be happy and let's all support everybody being happy, and treating people well. And so I get a little upset when that might not be the opinion. Mm-hmm. However, anyway, that's all to say, Star Trek and art has never not been political.
Yeah.
And
like, people are people. Social.
And it's like, you can't be like, it's been social, it's not political. Social and political are so intertwined, you cannot separate them.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot separate them.
And bring in that world arts and culture major, Taylor. That whack major.
It's true. It's true. All hand in hand and tied together. And I took classes outside of my major that were about, like, the personal is political. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get mad at Jerry Ryan for talking and sharing her stance Because also, Jeri Ryan has always been so active for the strike that happened and was very vocal about that. Somebody said, and during Captain Janeway's panel, and I'm like, wow, you didn't even use the actor's name.
Oh, gosh.
Like, she talked about support for Kamala Harris, and... Mm-hmm. You know, this episode that we're recording now in August is going to be released October 19th.
Oh, yeah. So that's going to be close.
It's going to be close to the election times. I don't... Oh, yeah. I should have put this disclaimer in, like, episode one. We are... Did I? We're recording this so far in advance that if there are events going on that we're not talking about, that is why. We don't know what the fuck is happening in October 19th. However, we do know that it will be close to the election. So maybe this is really well-timed as far as us talking about it. And we just
don't know.
And we just don't know about it yet, which is kind of weird and makes me a little existential. So I'm going to stop thinking about it and move on now. Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready. Yeah.
Good. I don't know what I needed to talk about today that somehow, wow, thank you for letting me just do that.
You know, if I can just piggyback a little bit, given the time that this is going to be coming out, you know, I do want to just do a little, I don't know if shout out's the right word, but just go out and vote. It's really important. Like, even if you're in a state where, you know, maybe it's guaranteed to go one way or the other, or it's traditionally goes one way, like, go out and
vote anyway.
Vote anyways. Like, it's, you know, there are millions of people in the world that would, I think, would love to have a say in their governments that don't get to. And that is one thing that I think sometimes we take for granted in the US is that we get to have a say. You know, albeit it's not necessarily a perfect system, but it is important to exercise that right. And, you know, and I understand that people,
I'm just going to say it, and I don't know what's going to happen in the next few months, but I'm safe in saying right now on August 4th, 2024, this is a podcast that is voting for Kamala Harris.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So if you don't like it, don't listen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we're in a political climate right now that I feel the need to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But still, please don't be mean to us because I will cry.
But here's, you know, and here's the thing. I think, like, not to get too meta, but I think it's in too political, but it is important. Like, I think even if you're not someone that supports Kamala Harris, maybe you are someone who supports Trump, but, you know, I'm still going to fight for your right to live as you want regardless.
Yeah, me too.
Like, if you want to live in a state where you abide by more conservative values and like that, if that's what makes you happy, I want you to be able to do that. But it doesn't mean that I have to do it.
Yes.
You know? But I will still fight for you to be able to do that.
I feel like, yeah, I absolutely agree. I want everybody to be able to live their life in a way that they so choose.
Mm-hmm.
And also sometimes you can't choose.
Yeah.
And so we should be able to live our lives the way that will bring everybody, and I mean everybody, the most mm-hmm. happiness. I think last season, we tiptoed a little bit around our beliefs in order to make sure that this is an inclusive, safe space, but I want it to be known that we are going to voice more of our opinions, I think. Yeah. I think that's just happening naturally as we're getting more comfortable.
Absolutely.
But I still want this to be a safe space, and I still want to have conversations, and I don't want you to be mean to me, and I won't be mean to you. I'm just going to tell you what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we need to do as a podcast so that our fan base is is one that aligns with us, and yep. but also, like, I want a safe space for everyone still.
Yeah.
Because I say my opinion doesn't mean you can't listen to me, because we're still just going to be talking about Star Trek at the end of the day, which is still just a little mm-hmm. TV show.
Yeah, and we still, like, I think I try really hard to not, you know, I am inherently a people pleaser, but
oh my god, me too.
Oh my god, twinsies.
Yay.
But I, you know, at a certain point, it's important to also take up space and show up authentically and be true to who you are and what you believe in. And you know, of course that looks different for everyone, but, I think it's important that people know, like, we're not, you know, if for some reason you are someone who would vote for Trump or vote for a conservative candidate, like, we would still, I mean, we're still happy to have you listen to the podcast. Like, it's not like we're saying don't listen to the podcast.
Just like, if you are a person who doesn't want to listen to those kinds of views and stuff, like, then yeah, don't listen to us, because it will upset yeah. you. But, like, if you're down to clown with us still, like, welcome. Hello yeah. and welcome.
And, like, and that's the thing too. That's what I think is great, is that if you don't like this podcast or another sort of media, or, you know, whatever it is, like, the great thing is that you don't have to watch or listen or participate. That's what's yeah. really, I think, wonderful
about it. You just also have to know that we think Captain Janeway made the right choice in regards to Tuvix.
I don't have context for that yet, but I would probably generally,
so, like, live with that. I feel like at this point in the Star Trek universe, Tuvix is, like, so controversial. Anyway, it's like the Trek equivalent of, are you a Democrat or a Republican? It's like,
do it's you a think dividing Janeway line.
Made the right or wrong decision in regards to Tuvix?
Are we going to be watching that episode this season?
Not this season, but you know what? I can add it and we can just have an extra episode.
Honestly, I think in light of the political atmosphere, it would make sense.
Probably. Maybe we'll watch that next, actually.
I would be down.
It's not necessarily political. It's like,
it's just controversial.
It's controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, brings up ideas of oh god, I don't even know. I do know, I just don't want to get into it right now. Anyway,
we'll save it for when we watch it, I guess.
Today. So us talking about politics and rights and things is actually a really great segue into our episode for today.
You'll understand. It usually is.
We are going to be watching Strange New Worlds.
Hell yeah.
So this is the, I'm not going to make you guess all the characters because I was listening to us do that the past few episodes and I was like, wow, I'd be so bored.
Yeah. yeah, sorry, listeners. I don't know anything about Strange New Worlds.
The thing is that you do, and you always want everybody to be in it.
Yeah.
So Strange New Worlds is Mbanga.
Yes.
Nurse Chapel.
Oh.
Pike. Captain Pike with the good hair.
Oh, no, I know Captain Pike.
Yeah.
No, I was, for some reason, I was now getting confused with the last show we watched. The,
Voyager?
Yeah, no. The one we watched.
Deep Space Nine?
Deep Space Nine. I think that's what it was. I was getting confused with Deep Space Nine.
Gotcha.
Anyways, but keep going. Yeah,
we've also got Una Chin Riley, number one.
Yep.
La'an with the braids.
Yes.
Love her.
La'an with the braids. That's what we're just going to start calling her.
Ortegas, the pilot. Okay.
Yep.
You haven't watched? No, you haven't. Never mind. Nothing. Ignore me.
Okay.
Ignore me. Who else is in it? Is that all the big ones? No. No, you stupid fuck. Uhura. Uhura's in this one. So is... I can't remember. Hemmer is in this series, but I don't know that Hemmer's in this season.
Thank God.
But instead, we have a new character whose name I can never fucking remember.
Okay.
But it's played by Carol Kane, if you know who that is.
I unfortunately do not.
Oh, man. She's the lady. Have you seen Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
I don't think so, actually.
Damn. Well, that's all I know her really from, so. Okay.
Well.
Any hoozy doozy. Is that it? Spock? Wow.
Oh. Ooh, Taylor. Dude, you're oof.
Ethan Peck is wonderful and beautiful. He's a beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not the character that I have a crush on in this series, so it's hard to remember him sometimes.
Fair enough. And Taylor, do tell us, who is the character you have a crush on in the series?
I have a crush on Pike. Which is weird because I'm a lesbian.
Yeah, I was going to say our resident lesbian has a crush on a man.
Yeah, because he's just so, like...
Papa?
Like, soft and nice.
Soft and nice.
But I also... But to be fair... Don't get me wrong. I also have a crush on Una, La'an, Nurse Chapel, and Uhura,
mm-hmm.
and Ortek. I have a crush on every single female. You cannot be in Star Trek Strange New Worlds and not be hot. I'm sorry. Carol Kane even does it for me, slightly.
It's just a show for hot people, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just a show where hot people show up.
To be fair, I feel that way about most of Star Trek, so there's really not...
Yeah, they really got a lot of lookers.
Granted, if we were playing a game of Smash or Pass,
which at some point
I would smash most of the females and maybe not as many of the males, just because I'm a lesbian.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the male crush for you is more of like an appreciation of their character.
Yes,
you know, it's like if it was the bear versus man situation, I would be comfortable choosing the man in these specific scenarios.
Yes. Precisely.
Yeah.
Anyway, set your timer, please.
Getting the timer out. You know, maybe at some point, if we get some solid merch going, you know, maybe we can create a little timer that's, you know, Elizabeth's Prediction Time branded, and it'll be one of the little, I have this timer, it's called, I guess they're called like Pomodoro timers, or it's basically a visual representation of the time passing, like it's like a, you know, I don't know, that'd be kind of fun.
I'm writing that down right now.
In case anybody's interested, if you have ADHD or just another mental, you know, who's he, what's it, that makes life interesting and chaotic. A shout out to, I don't know if a Pomodoro timer is like the exact name of the type of timer I use, but mine is, it's called Time Timer. You can find them on Amazon, not to plug anything for Amazon, but.
Ew, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, ew. Ugh,
Pomodoro, ew. That's the one where it's like 5:25. Did you already say that?
I don't know if it's, I don't know. I don't know if, it's just like an hour and you twist a little dial and it's like a little color. So it's like a color that covers the time and you can kind of see it passing and it has little.
Yeah, I used to use those for my students.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really great if you're someone who like maybe needs a visual
cue. I think that's mine.
Yeah, it helps a lot. So, you know, in case anybody is looking for, tools or timers, it's very helpful. And you can get them in fun colors. Okay, I've got my timer, 4 minutes.
The timer is set for 4 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, today's episode, Elizabeth, of Star Trek Strange New Worlds is called Ad Astra Prospera.
Oh, Ad Astra Prospera?
Per Aspera.
Per Aspera. Ad Astra per Aspera.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Before I make my prediction, I'm going to look up what this means
in Latin. Don't you dare. Do not.
Am I not allowed to? Okay.
Do not look it up because it is going to tell you about the Star Trek episode. I can almost guarantee it.
What if I pulled up a Google Translate or a...
Let me do it. Hold on. Okay.
You do a Google Translate or an Apple Translate.
The Latin phrase ad astra per aspera translates to through hardships to the stars or to the stars through difficulties.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have to think on this one for a second. All right. I think I've got it. Okay, here we go. I'm starting my timer. All right. So, in this episode,
yes,
we are going to be... Wait, we're on the Enterprise?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. So we're on the Enterprise, and the Enterprise is going to be trying to figure out how to travel incredibly fast. Kind of similar to last episode where we were dealing with, what, Warp 10, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're going to be traveling even faster. If that's possible. I don't know.
They also turn into lizards?
No. No, they don't turn into lizards. They turn into something way better.
Oh, no.
They're going to turn into stardust.
That's so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that means they die.
No, it's like a molecules. This is not scientifically accurate by any means, probably.
That's okay. We're not scientists.
Yeah, we're not scientists, but we support the sciences and scientists. Yes. Anyways, so they're going to be there's a specific, it's not a wormhole per se, but it's something like there's an anomaly in space that if you travel to it, it allows, there's something about the kind of the area around this anomaly that allows you to travel faster than you normally can. Like it doesn't necessarily change the technology. It's not that the technology in the ship is any different, but there's something about the environment in this specific area, part of space, that allows you to move faster. And I guess think of it this way. Maybe it's like, you know, when you go to, you know, when one goes to the moon and gravity's lighter, it's kind of like that, except not gravity, just all the other science things. Anyways. But this area of space is called the Rainbow Road. they go to this part of space, and it's very colorful. It's like if you took a sunset and combined it with space. So it's very colorful. Very colorful. And there's a bunch of little, you know, like you can see the stars around you, even though you're in space, which I guess is odd to think about. Can you see the stars in the sky like the way you do on Earth when you're in space? I don't think so.
I have not been to space, so I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, okay. We need to get someone on here who's been to space.
If you're an astronaut and for whatever reason you listen to this podcast, can you please... like email us and tell us if you see the stars if when you're in space, like when you're not.
Yeah. Thank you. If there's an astronaut,
if you know science. What?
Like if you like know science, if someone like knows like astronomy.
I would like an astronaut to tell me this, please.
Yes, no, I would prefer an astronaut.
I would like an astronaut, preferably a female who's been to space. So that we yes. If one of the NASA scientists that is a woman and is alive and listens to our podcast, can you please tell us?
Or if you're friends with that person
if you're friends with that person or you just know how to connect us to that person, please.
Put us in contact. We'd love to know.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the prediction. So they're going to go to the Rainbow Road, and but it's more of kind of like a region of space. It's not necessarily a specific road, but they get there, and they start, you know, the ship just naturally, they know they're there because the ship just naturally kind of starts going a little bit faster. No, the timer. Okay, I'm going to give myself more time.
That's the point of the timer, okay, Elizabeth.
I'm going to go fast. Okay, so they get there and they're floating around. They're like, oh, we're going a little bit faster. Like, I wonder what's going on. And then they start bumping into these kind of like almost puffy clouds, but they're full of stardust. And as they hit these puffy clouds of stardust, which I don't know if it actually, I don't know what stardust actually looks like in space. It's probably.
If you're an astronaut or you know how to get a hold of an astronaut, preferably a female astronaut, can you tell us what stardust looks like, please? But tell me what you think stardust looks like, Elizabeth.
I'm just kind of picturing like a really fun glitter kind of situation.
That's kind of what I picture for stardust too. Mm-hmm.
But like almost like fluffy glitter. Like almost like kind of like airy fluffy glitter.
I can
but in space.
Yeah.
And it refracts light really well. Like maybe just a bunch of diamonds, honestly.
Yeah, I can see that.
Powder diamonds.
Yes.
There we go. Powdered diamonds. And, okay, and as the powdered diamond, as the stardust, begins to touch the ship, it kind of begins to make it almost, like, translucent and, like, a little bit almost see-through. And they start noticing as the stardust touches the ship, it makes the ship go faster and faster and faster and faster. And then everybody on the ship starts kind of becoming translucent.
Like the stardust?
Like the stardust. And then suddenly they feel kind of like a super vibration on the ship. And then all of a sudden they're in a strange new world.
So they,
I don't know what happens after that. It's literally just about getting there. What?
It's about the journey, not the destination.
Exactly. No one gives a shit about where they got to. It's that they weren't on, they went on the Rainbow Road, got turned into stardust. Oh, and when they arrive at their location, they materialize back into, you know, normal.
So, like, they're matter. Transporting.
Yes, but in a sexier, more fun way.
Ah, sexier transporting.
Mm-hmm.
Love.
And way more colorful, because.
Why not?
Why not? Exactly.
So yeah. I have some questions.
Yes, go ahead. I'll allow it.
This has nothing to do with your prediction and everything to do with what you remember about Strange New Worlds. We watched Ghosts of Illyria last season.
Yes.
That was the episode where we found out that Una Chin Reilly is an Illyrian and is genetically enhanced. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
So, vaguely. Do you remember that episode at all?
I can't say that I.
So, I'll tell you.
Remember.
It's the one where everybody was like obsessed with light.
Oh, and they were all like trying to get around it and like being, and like heat and stuff too, like fire.
Yeah. And like Hemmer tried to transport the star.
Yeah.
The planet's core in. Or the star's core or something.
Yeah.
And Una was unaffected because she's Illyrian.
Yes.
Which is a genetically enhanced species, which, if you'll remember, is not allowed in the Federation.
Oh, okay. That
remember
was
the end of the episode was her being like, I'm resigning from Starfleet.
Yeah.
I'm resigning from Starfleet. And then Captain Pike was like, no, you're not. I'm not going to tell anybody. You're fine.
Yeah.
This episode, someone found out.
Oh.
From Starfleet. So this episode is kind of the aftermath.
Oh, no.
Of that.
Someone snitched.
I don't even actually remember who snitched.
There is a snitcher. Someone snitched.
There is a snitcher, I think, and this might be, that might be part of this episode. So.
I see.
That's the episode. It's the aftermath of what happens to Una after somebody finds out, because at the end of season one, so this is at the start of season two. I need to preface this.
Yeah, I was
this is at the start of season two. the second episode, I believe, in season two, episode two.
Mm-hmm.
In the last episode of season one, Una was forcibly removed from the ship and arrested.
What the hell?
So, now we deal with that.
That's no good.
All right, you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Let's go. All right, we are back from watching Ad Astra Per Aspera. Now, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
What are your first impressions of this episode?
It was honestly really fucking good. Let's see, I'm trying to think about what to start with. Number one, the scene where Spock and the Vulcan, whatever the fuck his name is, the old guy.
The like Admiral guy, him?
Yeah, the Admiral guy. Are sitting at they're in a restaurant or dining hall or something, and they're sitting across from each other. And I think it's Dr. Mbenga and
Ortegas.
Oh, yeah, and Ortegas are sitting there. Ortegas is like making fun, like, oh, we should go play. I don't know what it is, but like some sports game. It was like
Kalto.
Yes. We're gonna, and then we can talk about how it's, oh, that must be so fun, and all of these, like, very, it's
so logical that you're doing this thing.
Yeah, exactly. The doctor goes, he goes, like, can't you tell that they hate each other? He's like,
and she's like, hate each other.
Yeah, yeah. And then, Ortegas is like, really? How can you tell? He's like, oh. The body language, it's so obvious.
And it shows them and they're just sitting there like stiff.
They're just
moving only their lips to speak.
Gets up, walks over to them and goes, I'm sorry you had to see that outburst.
And it's funny because like right before Spock is like about to come over, Ortegas looks at Mbenga and is like, "Are you messing with me? Like you're joking, right?"
Yeah.
And then he comes over and he's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed," kind of thing.
It was the funniest fucking thing. I literally burst out laughing because it was great. Great acting. My
favorite thing that. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of the original series to know if they do this often enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when, like, Strange New Worlds just pokes fun at the Vulcan logic and non-emotion.
Yeah.
It's so funny. And mm-hmm. It's always that kind of dry humor that's just like, I'm sorry you had to witness this emotional outburst. And it's like, what?
That was honestly such a great scene.
That's one of the funniest. That's what I love about Ortegas is Ortegas will almost always bring levity to any situation.
Yeah.
And this is no different.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great job. And that was honestly just such a great scene. Let's see. Now getting more serious. Yeah, Pike's hair, man. I forget every time. And then I see that hair again.
Now getting more serious, Pike's hair is fucking beautiful. Yeah, Pike's
hair, man. That is a Anson Mount. Good on you for growing a head of hair like that.
Right?
I'm assuming it's not a wig. I mean, I'm assuming it's his hair.
It might be. He does have really good hair, but you know how they always like judge everybody's hair up?
Yeah.
Like Janeway wears a wig, like multiple hair pieces in her thing. Like,
well, it just makes it easier if you're trying to get like consistency. Like, I feel like when shooting, because you know, everybody's hair does weird things on certain days. You know, sometimes just hair be weird.
Hair be wildin'.
Hair be wildin'. And wigs be consistent.
Yes.
But anyways, regardless, good on you, Pike, for growing that.
What is this vibe that did you like the episode?
Oh no, I did. I'm just trying to, before I get into the very serious stuff, trying to get rid of at least talk about some of the less serious stuff. Or maybe I'll save some of that. Okay, well, let's get into actual serious stuff. Number one, I loved getting to learn more about like Illyrian culture, even more so. Like they actually go to the scene when Pike actually goes to, do they call it like Illyria?
Yes, well, I don't know about that. So the place that he goes at the beginning to seek out help, I think, I don't know that that's technically the Illyrian homeworld. It might be.
Oh, okay.
It's just a place that from, okay, so I could be totally making this up. In which case, I don't know, email us and be like, Taylor, don't spread misinformation. And I will promptly correct myself and issue an apology like a good podcaster. But what it sounds like is Illyrians kind of just like go to different worlds,
yeah,
and adapt them. Like it's like they talked about in Ghosts of Illyria, they adapt themselves to fit an environment as opposed to an environment to suit their needs. So like where they are, I don't know if it's necessarily a home world or just a colony.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if it said that or not.
I just remember, like, I remember him, I think Pike, like, has, like, he has, like, a narrative or it's his personal log kind of in the background while he's walking into this building and saying something just like, you know, the air here is unsuitable for humans, but the Illyrians are fine and have adapted to it. So maybe it's just that there's, like, a lot of them there, but it's, anyways, I don't think it matters if it's a homeworld or not. But he walks into this building of what, like, I can only assume is some kind of law firm or something.
Right, like a private practice location.
Yeah.
Corporation, for lack of a better term.
Oh, and another, like, funny scene. Just the interaction with, like the receptionist or, like, the legal assistant in the front. And just he's just like, I'll wait. And then his oxygen tank is, like, going off, like, it is 2%, 1%. And the legal assistant's like, oh, I don't know if you will wait. It doesn't sound like you're going to be able to wait.
And he's like, no, I will.
And he just starts suffocating.
He's like the toddler that holds their breath to get what they want.
Yep.
And like risks passing out or oxygen deprivation for a cookie. Like that's what it was.
It was. I just forget sometimes how iconic Pike is. Like,
I love him. He's honestly one of my favorites. I love him.
Yeah, he's so funny. Like, specifically this portrayal of Pike. I don't think I've seen enough of the, like, original.
We'll watch the cave, don't worry.
But yeah, great. And then, we go in and meet, what is her name again? It's
Mira.
Lyra? Yeah, I think Lyra.
No,
it's not Lyra?
Is it Neera? Hold on.
It's either Neera or Lyra. I can't remember.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, look it up. Anyways, but it's Una's old like friend, I'm assuming, from like growing up, like her youth. And it's like, you know, you can tell that there's some sort of, you know, when Pike's talking to her, you can tell there's some.
It's Neera.
It's Neera?
Yeah.
Okay. Neera. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, Pike and Neera talking. Pike's like, you gotta take Una's case on, you know, because like she needs your help, essentially. Like, you know how to help her, and you can tell that Neera's kind of like resistant. She's kind of like, ugh, like, you know, I'm not gonna be able to win this, like. I don't know. I saw it as I was looking kind of at it through the lens of what a lot of, you know, what a lot of like civil rights lawyers have to do. Like it is really hard because you take on these cases and you're essentially having to tread a path that hasn't been tread, and you're having to do your best to connect to the law that's there while also trying to make new law in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, she decides to take the case. And the scene when
I also love the way that Pike plays this game with her is so good, because he brings it back to the Illyrian people as a whole, because he knows that's what she cares about. He knows that there's beef between them. So he's like, then don't do it for Una. Fuck Una. But what about the people? Like Illyrian people, like I know about them, I've met them, I know their actual history. Because if you remember at the end of the last episode, or at the end of Ghosts of Illyria, he's very much like, I don't think we ever understood these people.
Yeah.
The way that we should have, because they talk about it throughout the episode, but the eugenics wars
yeah,
was a big thing in Federation history, or in the history of augmentation and genetic alterations and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of conflation, I think, in the Federation at this time between what just an Illyrian is, which is a people that practice like cohesion with environment through genetic alterations,
yeah,
and augmentation and augments, what they derogatorily call augments, mm-hmm. Which was more geared towards like power and,
yeah, and
dangerous aspects of genetic alteration. And so he brings it back to that, which is so smart.
I know. It's really clever.
I feel like if you ever want to get a lawyer to do something, be like, it'll make your career great. And well, stands up for the thing that you want to stand up for.
I mean, and honestly, that is a lot of it. Like, that's a lot of, I mean, I hate to say it, but there is definitely a thread of truth to that, in the sense that, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of work in law that is very much like, as much as you care for the specific client that you're representing, you know, it is also about the larger landscape, the larger legal landscape. And, you know, what does this case mean for future cases, for future, you know, for people, like in this case, you know, for other Illyrians. And yeah, so she's like, oh, okay, whatever. You convinced me. Like, I think she even says, like, oh, that was some clever, you know, clever convincing on your end.
She's aware. She's exactly aware.
Made it even that much better. But yeah, oh, and then there's this kind of underlying, I forget at what point it comes in, but it's, I think it's La'an is like, I suspect that someone leaked the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's talking to, fuck, what's her name?
Neera?
No.
Una? Chapel? Uhura?
Uhura, yeah. She's talking to Uhura, like, we gotta find out, can you tell me what's going on? Like, can you go through personal logs? And Uhura's like, you know, I can't do that. Like, I can't break, you know, protocol to, but anyway, and that, it kind of introduces this idea of, like, how was it, you know, how did the Federation find out about Una? And yeah, and it's funny because, like, I'd almost kind of forgotten about that until the point that it gets revealed that it was, like, it was Una herself that, you know, like, almost not tattled, but, like, found, she
gave herself up.
Yeah, she gave herself up. And
it's like the way Neera figures it all out, mm-hmm. in a way that benefits is, yeah, so, like, it gets me every time, because, yeah, she somehow, and I know this is like a lawyer's job, and that's what kind of why obviously why I wanted to watch this episode,
yeah,
because I know that even if you don't like law school, that's fine. It's okay. I don't really like acting school to some extent because it's like training and it's awful.
Yeah.
But you like this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the way that she is able to get Una to say the specific words,
mm-hmm.
that a person needs to say.
Yep.
To qualify for asylum is just like, what?
Yeah.
What? Yes.
It is. It's really interesting because it, from the perspective, I recently took, the best way to describe it is like legal ethics, like, mm-hmm. And you know, how you perform as a lawyer ethically, how you fulfill your duty and, your relationship with your client. And, when you think about the kind of client lawyer relationship, at least in the U.S., is, you know, your client gets to decide, you know, what like their ultimate goal is, but it's up to the lawyer to determine how you reach that goal.
Right.
You know? And so I think what Neera does here is a perfect example of that, of like, like, hey, I know you, we want to get you pardoned, excused, whatever it is. Like, we don't want you to go to jail for this because you shouldn't have to. But how we get there, I'm going to have to get creative with it. And as I feel like as a civil rights lawyer, that is something that is really common. You have to, I don't know, just, I think this episode made me think a lot about like our history in America.
Yeah, they don't shy away.
No.
In the slightest from making it very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Politically.
Yeah.
Where this episode stands.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I don't know if it's Nira specifically that explains it this way or if it's
she does. If it's what you're about to say, then it's her.
Yeah, the idea that like we have law, but law doesn't equal always like what is absolutely moral and right. Yes. She says this thing about like, well, you know what? At one point, slavery was legal. That was the law. At one point, people were totally allowed to discriminate based on, you know, who they loved, their religion, the gender identity, like all of these different things. You mm-hmm. know, what color you were, like that is, and what group you belong, like, and anyways, so she goes on this lovely, like, those were all okay at one point. But we realize it's not okay. And so we have to have that same perspective now. And that's something I think, like, personally, I especially appreciate, because I think that's how I try to look at a lot of things, especially where right now, where we are as a society, obviously way better than where we used to be, but there's still a lot of progress to be made. And I think looking back, it gives me hope in some ways, as far as, you know, at one point, things that we know are not okay and not like absolutely not moral now were considered okay. And so I hope that the things that are still maybe considered okay now that really shouldn't be okay in the future, people will kind of wake up to that. And it just takes time. But it also made me think about when Nier kind of goes this claiming asylum route, I don't remember exactly what she calls it, but it's some like higher, it's like a higher law almost within the Federation code, like
the Prime Directive.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that. The Prime Directive is like Star Trek and like the Federation's best friend,
mm-hmm.
which is like, it's kind of the Prime Directive. It's like the first thing that you think about. It's like, not it's interfering like- with the evolution. The natural evolution of a species mm-hmm. until they're ready to meet fucking aliens and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that she brings that up with Admiral April, I think, or Commander mm-hmm. April, Admiral April.
I think.
And
I can't remember.
And kind of, you know, she starts laying that foundation of like, captains have discretion, don't they? You know? Mm-hmm. And clearly discretion is, you've exhibited discretion in other parts of your life. So, you know, we can see like discretion's okay. Captains have the ability to do that. That's why they're mm-hmm. captains. And then she later on, I think several scenes later, she then kind of starts tying into this asylum principle.
Well, yeah. Cause they start to put like,
oh yeah. They put all of
right on yes. trial. He's not even there. He's like sitting in his little office. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Freaking. Nasty ass, you know, Vulcan guy.
Doesn't allow Patel to stand up, which, by the way, mm-hmm. Patel and Pike are like a situationship. I don't know if you got that.
I got vibes. I was gonna ask about that.
They're a full situationship, mm-hmm. which is really funny.
She's the prosecutor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah.
So like, he doesn't let her stand up,
mm-hmm.
and instead like takes over and starts.
Yeah.
Badgering in a legal definition of badgering sense, but in my opinion, I'm like, stop badgering her.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
About Pike.
Mm-hmm.
But Nira turns that fully in the favor of asylum because
yeah.
technically speaking, and I think law is so funny because technicalities are so technical and tech. It's like, well, technically, she did ask for asylum when she told him she wasn't only. Like, I think that law is so funny, Elizabeth.
Yeah, it is. It's
technically.
Yeah, it is. It is funny. It's also very frustrating because it is interesting. Like, you know, as much as we want to have a correct, clear-cut answer all the time, it never is. You know, there's this kind of ongoing joke that if you ask a lawyer a question, they're always going to answer with, "Oh, well, it depends." And unfortunately, when it comes to, like, you know, legal questions, like, for the most part, it does. Because there is a lot of nuance to different sets of, you know, circumstances and situations. And yeah, it is really those small details sometimes that make or break something.
So do you, as a law student, agree with the way Neera went about the case?
Yes. And I'll tell you why. Because when it comes to what I would say the black letter law for them with regard to Illyrians being part of Federation, I mean, it was clearly against her. It was definitely against her. And she did break that. And so I think Neera was very clever to find this exception. Was clever enough to realize, like, hey, technically Una met this exception, which is a lot of times what you have to do. There are a lot of exceptions, but they're it's built on technicalities sometimes, and there are very specific sets of conditions you have to fulfill. And I thought there was one point, it didn't end up being necessary, but there was one point where I think it was around the time that La'an, like, we had, you know, La'an was trying to figure out how the Federation found out about Una being an Illyrian. And I think Neera was saying, like, oh, well, okay, if you can find out how, you know, because typically, she was saying something about how in order to get, like, access to records of personal logs, it would take the Federation, like, at least 6 months after all the protocols. Yeah. And it's definitely not been that long. So if someone did get access, it would have been illegally. And so that could get the case thrown out. And that is something that is tricky about law sometimes, is that cases, that does happen a lot, where evidence is either acquired illegally or it's introduced illegally, or there's it's a lot of that protocol stuff that sometimes can be it can be determinative. And so I like that they had kind of alluded to that, even though it didn't end up being the case with Una's situation.
I feel like they almost did that more from a storytelling perspective of showing La'an's fear and relationship with Una, because reason why she thought that somebody, like, leaked it was because she was afraid her own personal log was the culprit, because she's related to Khan.
Really?
The Wrath of Khan guy, yeah.
Okay.
So he's in augment, and don't come at me. I haven't seen Wrath of Khan yet. I'm getting there. Please don't get mad at me. but from my understanding, that is the eugenics wars that they're referring to.
Oh, okay.
I think
your face is right now for people.
I'm scared. I'm like,
so
nice. I just haven't seen it yet. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
only been 3 years since I've been watching this show, or 4 years. But
you only have so much time. You can't make it through the entire body of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Unless you are only doing that.
but he's an augment.
Okay.
And was doing the unethical thing, and is the reason why genetic enhancement and stuff isn't allowed. And so that's she was, like, worried Because she was upset that Una was an Illyrian and then got over herself because she had to for the storyline.
Yeah.
And then this was kind of, she was like, fuck, like, if somebody got that, they would know. But I don't feel that way anyway. Like, and I love the interaction she has with Neera, where Neera's like, it's not your fault. It's literally... Yeah.
That's actually a perfect segue. And what I wanted to talk about was the whole, this whole thread of, you were taught to hate yourself.
Yeah.
Augments and Illyrians have been taught to hate themselves. They've been taught that they're dangerous. They've been taught all these things. And I think that, again, is political. It's political. It opens up this discussion of what do we teach people that have been from historically marginalized groups? Like, what has society told them and taught them about themselves so much that you have to do all of this individual unpacking to remind yourself that that's not true about you?
Yes.
You know? And I think that's sometimes why I'm gonna get a little political. We've already been political. I'm gonna get a little more political. I think language is very important and words have a lot of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
While they are socially constructed and they do take on the meaning we all agree they do, I think the language that people use is important because it's used to oppress. It's also used to heal. But I know people get bent out of shape sometimes about feeling like they're being told to be politically correct or whatever. And it's like, I think there's a good way to approach that with someone who maybe uses maybe not as, I don't know what the word is, but it's like sensitive language or like thoughtful language.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and we don't want to just be calling people out. I think it's important to call people in and make it a discussion. But the reason it's important is because when you use words that have been used to oppress people, it furthers that narrative, you know?
Absolutely.
And I mean, I don't think this is news to anyone, but
people, you know, often weaponize language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something to be said for, like, you know, maybe this is simplifying it, but just think about like slang, like generational slang, like Gen Z slang, Gen Alpha slang. Like, the fact that words or phrases just get used in such a way that, like, you can identify a generation based off of the certain, like, terms they use for something, like cool or funny or, you know, whatever, or even the emojis now. Like, that, like, words are signifiers and words have meaning and they indicate, like, they carry social, you know, they carry the social kind of background that gives the word meaning with them. And so I think it's really important to think about, you know, and not that, like, I don't think we should be afraid of words. And I think it's important to investigate and really interrogate, well, why do I use the words that I use? And I think it's important for us to think about how they affect power dynamics, but I don't know where I'm going with this. I guess I'm trying to say, like, there's power in words and there's power in how we define people in society and how we allow people to define themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that Neera and, I mean, La'an as well. And then, you know, Una kind of, there's this underlying thread of when you're taught to hate yourself and you're taught that other people hate you and fear you, like, how do you exist? How do you exist in a society that sees you that way?
And it's also, I think, how you exist in that society, it was demonstrated quite well between La'an, Neera, and Una, because Una left
mm-hmm.
fully, went into hiding, essentially, and hid who she was to blend in.
Mm-hmm.
Neera decided to embrace and fight for
mm-hmm.
who and what she is. And La'an's just tripping balls, like not knowing what to do about what she is because there is so much shame attached to it.
Yeah, she's still in, like, processing stage.
Yeah, she was never given like the full opportunity to do so because of her last name. And so it's I like that they kind of showcased the different sides, and there's plenty more to explore, but I think these were a good 3 to hit.
Yeah.
And because Star Trek does such a good job at drawing parallels to what happens in society. I say it every single episode because I'm laying on the gray moral dilemma, gray area pretty thick this season. And honestly, the next 2 episodes, I'm like, damn, we've caught it in for us.
Yeah.
To the point where I might change one of them, but still tell you to watch it on your own.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, and I will. Yeah. Guys, Star Trek is, it's political.
It's, because it's like everything that Una talks about is things that marginalized communities have faced, that people of color face and face.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good. I know. Just love it. And having Neera be a Black woman was intentional.
Yes, I love that. Yeah.
I just love this show. Because it is like the things that, like, you can relate it to the time, like, have you seen Passing?
No, what is that?
It's this movie. I'm blanking on the names of the actresses because I suck at names.
Here, I can.
Oh my god, she's like so good. She was in Guardians of the Galaxy, I think. Wow.
Oh, Tessa Thompson?
Yes! Oh my god, yes.
Holy cow, and you've got Andre Holland, Helena Bonham Carter.
It's literally, it's a stacked cast.
Yeah, holy cow.
But the premise is that, like, she runs into one of her childhood friends who had been living the past, like, however many years as a white woman, even though she was a person of color. And I feel like this storyline is drawing a parallel to that in that, like, Una was hiding.
Yeah,
and that happens in so many different marginalized communities. Like, even my dad, I don't know if you know this, actually. My dad's half Mexican because my dad's parents are like from Mexico.
Oh wow.
Or my grandparents are from Mexico, but my immediate grandfather was born in Utah, and they wrote white on my grandpa's birth certificate, even though he's Mexican, to make sure that he was like treated okay, and like named him Joseph. They're in Utah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, what else are you gonna name them?
And just like things like that that happened to different gay people.
Oh, masquerading
as straight people and then going home to their like actual spouses at the end of the day and during the Lavender Scare. Like, there's countless examples of people being forced to hide purely for who they are and the internalized racism, homophobia. Like everything that comes after that, you know what I mean?
That's yeah.
What I meant, but
no, I know exactly what you mean. I think, you know, I think we acknowledged this last episode, but just to acknowledge again, like we're both cis white women, you know, and so it's like we can only
we need to just put a disclaimer in our intro that's like we are cis white women talking about complex and nuanced issues, and we are simply doing our best.
Yeah.
And the thing that is also important to note is that, like, I don't know the answer to everything. Obviously. Nobody does. But it's things like art that try to break down the barriers of understanding so that more people will be open to that infinite diversity and infinite combinations that's talked about in the Star Trek universe, which is why it shocks me when people don't believe that Star Trek is political, or when people get angry at Star Trek being quote unquote woke, when it's like, okay,
it kind of always has been.
Exactly. This episode is a modern episode, but in like the original series in the 60s was really groundbreaking. Just having Uhura on the bridge not playing a maid was groundbreaking. Yeah. Like having the same sex kiss that we saw in Rejoined.
Yeah.
Was groundbreaking. Having, I know that a lot of, there's a specific episode that people don't like with Riker where he falls in love with like a non-binary, like it's a whole complicated thing, but even that is like a form of representation, and they never shy away from issues.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always get it right.
Yeah.
But like nobody does.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it comes down to creating conversation, creating exposure, creating places where those stories can be told by the people whose stories they are. And I don't know, I think if anything, I've always just been grateful to be able to have had at least enough experience in like exposure. Not again, not perfectly, to be able to feel like I want to be an advocate, and I at least want to be a support in people telling their stories.
And that's like coming from a person, not to air out your dirty laundry.
No, that's fine.
You did come from a very conservative background. And as a person, like I know plenty of people, myself included, that came from like pretty conservative backgrounds and then suddenly like went to college.
Out to the world.
Like got out into the world and had opinions shift, and that's like what it's all about. It's about education, and nobody has to be perfect. That's what I mean, I think, all the time when I'm like, I just want people to be happy, and because it's like with just learning about different people, it's like, who cares about things that don't affect you?
Yep. Yeah.
So let's just treat everybody well. And I'm an idealist. And you know what? I don't think that's a bad thing.
No,
and
I don't think
it's a naive thing. I think it's a hopeful thing. And I think that the creators of Star Trek wanted there to be a TV show that looked at the hope in humanity instead of the destruction of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because ultimately, like you said, you have to have something to strive for.
Always.
Even if you fall short, you have to have something you're aiming for. And I think that's where the, you know, whether you want to call it naivete, idealism, optimism comes in. Like, you got to have a goal and a hope for something different in order to even get close to that.
Like, I as an idealist, optimist person, I want to live in a world where people don't have to hide any part of themselves regardless, and that there's no societal decision what something looks like. Like, people are people, and people are all different, and there's no one way to have a body.
Yep.
Which is what this boils down to, even in the episode of like, it's for that, for the Illyrian society, it is a cultural, religious, or not religious, that what are they like, ritual, traditional,
yeah, it's like a cultural ritual
for them to do in order to work with the environment around them and to be healthier individuals. And the Federation has a block. And I really enjoy that this current Trek is really honing in on the fact that, like, yes, Federation is idealism, but it's also not perfect.
Yep.
Because no system is.
No. Yeah. I think you, whoever you are, you deserve to show up and identify how you feel and what you feel a part of. And it doesn't matter, because someone else can feel differently about themselves, and that's fine. Like, you know, how I think even the very simplest, like, to take it really, really simple, like, I don't know, the idea of, like, color, like what colors are masculine or feminine. Like the fact that that has changed so much over the years.
It's all a construct.
Yes. Like, and heels. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't want to get too much off topic here at the end of the podcast, but like high heels were worn by French noblemen. French noblemen. That's who started wearing them.
Yep.
So just keep that in mind, y'all. Anyways.
So this has been Political Discourse with Elizabeth and Taylor. We are going to rename the podcast and rebrand completely. No. I think this is a really important episode of Star Trek, and I think it should, because it's Measure of a Man, but different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still think it's a very approachable episode, at least personally.
Yeah.
And, you know, it addresses things, and I think it brings up important topics without it being, I think it's in the context of the episode. And so it makes it like more, it makes it more easily digestible.
Yeah.
Which is why we love Star Trek, because it's always been political.
Who's your favorite character?
I think Neera, honestly. I don't know if we see her ever again in a different episode, but I think Neera really...
I can't remember.
I think she really gets my vote on this one.
She shows up and shows out in this episode. She kicks ass. I feel like we do see her again, but I
hope, because, you know, and actually, I mean, again, I don't want to run too long. But another thought that I had while watching this was like, Neera is still showing up and advocating for people in her, that, you know, her, like her community and her group, in the midst of her obviously clearly struggling herself with her own identity still. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an important thing for people to see, that like, you don't have to have it all figured out to stand up for your community. And that it's important to just make sure that people's voices are heard.
Well, it's like we said at the beginning, I don't have to like you to fight for your rights, just as much as I would fight for my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
All right.
Well, you can find us on Instagram at Brides of Chaotica Pod, and you can email us for any reason. Please be nice, but you can email us at Brides of
Chaotica. I'm paranoid that the more outspoken we get, people are going to be mean.
You know, and again, look, it's fine. We're taking up our space. We still want you to take up yours. Anyways, our email is bridesofchaotica@gmail.com.
Tune in next week of Brides of Chaotica. Tune in next week to Brides of Chaotica to find out which episode I'm going to have Elizabeth watch next.
Bye.
Bye.
Somehow I feel comfortable here.
You look like a worm.
Would you still be my friend if I was a worm?
Yes, I would. I would take you on little wormy walks. I'd get like a little harness for you. Like, we'd go on little wormy walks, you know?
Does a worm wear a harness?
I don't know. Like, you know, like a little... It's... You know, like a dog harness. You know, it's kind of like that.
The dogs have arms and legs.
It's better than having one single choke point that could choke the worm, you know, by accident.
But their whole body is a neck.
Hence, it's better to have a lot of little collars.
I see. Okay.
It distributes the pressure evenly.
Is your timer set?
Oh, no, it isn't.
We've gotten to the point, you guys, in Taylor's life where she's accepted her neurodivergence, so now things are going to get more unhinged.
It's gonna get better and worse.
Yes.
Because life's more fun when you're neurospicy.
It's a lot of things. Okay.